very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guess, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 4341790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricket. It was all TKR, yes. In fact, they won the CPL 2020 without losing a game. First time in the history of the competition. And we at Mason and Guess, we want to congratulate the side. Pollard did a wonderful job as captain, no doubt about that. And of course, we want to do an assessment of the CPL. In fact, CPL under the microscope this evening on Mason and Guest. We want to, of course, go around the region, get reaction from Philo Wallace, who, of course, is a former West Indies Hardhitting and batsman. We also want to talk to Fazir Mohammed, get the view of the journalists, and we want to go up to Jamaica. Not only talk to Michael Hall, who's already online, Michael Hall, of course, of CPL. We hope to be joining Wayne Lewis a little bit later on. And, of course, we want to continue to go around the region. So we're going to be focusing on the CPL. I'm Andrew Mason, and along with me is, of course, co-host Dr. Andrew Ford, already ready, like Freddy, to make his contribution. But without any further ado, let me go to the land of wood and water and talk to a man who's not from Portmore. I don't think he's a Portmore man. I don't even think he's a man from Mobe, Barnett Street. I think he's a Kingstonian. My good friend, Michael Hall. Are you a Kingstonian, Michael? Good afternoon to you, sir. Michael?
Mike.
Yes. Are you hearing me loud and clear, Michael?
Yes, I'm hearing you now. Good afternoon, Andrews.
Right.
And yes, you are correct. I am a Kingstonian, although I have been to both Portmore and
on more than one occasion. All right. Now, Michael, it's good to have you on the show this evening. Your overall assessment of CPL, of course, you have a very important role, the operations man. When you do an assessment of CPL, I know you had challenges, COVID and all, but let's start with your overall assessment of CPL.
Andrew, I think that by any measure, the Caribbean Premier League this year was a resounding success for the simple reason that we were able to do what we did, stage the tournament successfully, have some decent cricket played, despite the fact that a lot of the cricketers would have been quite rusty before starting the tournament. But to pull it together, to stage it, to have it successfully completed without anyone testing positive for the virus throughout that entire almost 8-week period. Anyone who tries to tell me that the Caribbean Premier League was not a success this year, I'm having none of it. I think it was a resounding success.
Mm-hmm. Any concerns at all, though, as you went through the just about a month? Any concerns that would have bothered you a lot? Or not?
Yeah, so look, Andrew, I mean, look, you know, it was a challenge for everybody, you know, particularly the first 14 days after we arrived with the quarantine and the lockdown, particularly the first 7 days, which were spent, I guess, for want of a better analogy, which were spent in almost prison-like conditions, not necessarily based on the quality of the accommodation, mind you, but the fact that you were locked up and that, you know, your door was knocked 3 times a day so you could collect your meals and so on. It certainly had that feel. But look, I think that once we got past the first 7 days and people realized that what was being done was for the overall health and benefit of themselves and their families eventually when they were able to, you know, return home, I think people fell into the routine, Andrew, and accepted the fact that leaving the hotel would be restricted to going to a practice session or a game, and that no one was able to come and visit you in the hotel. I mean, that was particularly hard on the persons in the bubble who were resident in Trinidad or who are resident in Trinidad, because clearly their family would have been a situation of them being so near and yet so far. But again, you know, after the reality hit and people realized, look, we're here to play in a cricket tournament. This is what we signed up for. I think it went very well.
Mm-hmm. Doc Ford, good evening to you, sir.
Good night to Mr. Hall and to you, Andrew, and to all the listeners. I believe that the CPL was a success overall. I'd given my opinion about that last week, so I probably won't repeat myself again unless I get a special request. Mr. Hall, from a financial standpoint, I don't know if you can speak towards that. Having the CPL in one location, not having to spend money in transporting players and equipment and other things like that, do you think that this model proved to be more of an economic success than the previous models, in spite of not having a crowd in the stadium?
Doc, I think it was a double-edged sword. You know, I mean, clearly on the cost side of the equation, we would not have, we would have eliminated a lot of air travel. We would have not had to move broadcast equipment around to six different countries, or two different countries rather, because there would have normally been two sets of broadcast equipment in the region. So on the cost side of the equation, there were some savings, but you have to bear in mind that on the revenue side, we had a lot more, I wouldn't say a lot more, but we had more sponsorship partners on board. But you will appreciate that sponsors, particularly regional sponsors, get bang for their buck by way of fan interaction and activation of their products and services at the venues with fans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the games being played behind closed doors, whilst folks associated with the tournament, I suspect, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I suspect that the value of those sponsorships may have been reduced. Look, you know, I think both the league and the six individual franchises went into the tournament this year knowing fully well that it was going to be, if not a financial bloodbath, then certainly it wasn't going to be anything to write home about. But I think that collectively, and kudos to the franchise owners, we took a decision that it would be just too detrimental for the CPL brand to disappear for a year, as it were, if the tournament weren't held. It's a highly competitive, you know, environment, professional sports leagues. And we felt it was important to maintain the visibility of our brand. It's early yet to say what the financial outturn was and how the league and the individual franchises fared. I suspect that if I can speak euphemistically, it wouldn't be the best year ever financially for the league or the franchises.
The ability to pull off the entire tournament in one locale, though, does beg the question as to whether you have a zonal approach to the tournament and then in the final analysis go for the semifinals and finals in the locations of choice. It does give you a chance to look at the format of the tournament and to be strategic as far as the financing is concerned, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, and notwithstanding the fact that the sort of method that we used this year was in many respects forced upon us because of the coronavirus situation. Yes, it does give us an opportunity to look at how we structure it. We have to bear in mind that one of the attractions to the franchise owners is the fact that they are able to play 5 of their 10 games in their home country and build on or leverage the relationships that they would have established in those countries over the years. So that's something that we always have to be mindful of. But certainly there is a certain amount of appeal, again, on the cost side of the equation, if we can narrow it down to, say, 3 countries hosting as opposed to 6. And eliminating some of the additional travel, which, as you suggested in your question, might look to us thinking about some sort of zonal type competition. Although zones of 3 in a competition with only 6 teams might be a little, I don't know, wishy-washy. We'll see. Because look, we're a league that has always adapted and or tried to and tried to be innovative. So this certainly has given us some impetus to look at possibly looking differently at how we stage the tournament.
There was a time when some believed that the CPL was second to the IPL, but the Big Bash has grown over time. Do you think that the CPL has been able to maintain its initial position among the T20 leagues in the world?
Well, I don't know that we lost any ground to the Big Bash before this year. And I would suggest to you that the fact that we were the first franchise cricket league out of the box, to go from start to finish during the pandemic, gave us a big boost in terms of our global appeal. I'm told that this year our viewership is the best it has ever been in the history of the league. And that's across all platforms. And I think that's, again, largely due to the fact that we were pretty much the only game in town. So I think that we would have maintained our status as the, second most popular T20 league behind the IPL. I don't think we've lost any ground at all.
Okay. The franchises didn't have to rent stadia, but when you look at the remuneration for players, one of the limiting factors with the CPL is that the level of remuneration for the number of weeks that the tournament goes on is lower than, certainly the IPL, and maybe I'm not sure how it compares to the same Big Bash. Do you think that being able to increase your financial platform to get better international players would be the limiting factor for the increase and improve its stature?
Look, I don't think there's any question that... Well, first of all, there's no way that we can match salaries offered by IPL franchises. I don't think that's going to happen, certainly in the foreseeable future. Is it something that the league would encourage the franchises to do? That is to say, to increase salaries offered to players? Absolutely. One of the things that has helped us to continue to attract name players from overseas is a natural resource that we have. I don't think anybody can deny, and I've certainly been around Caribbean cricket long enough to know that players simply love to come to the Caribbean to play cricket. I don't think we can discount the value of that. And it suggests, I'm not saying that to suggest that guys will come for a pittance because they know that they can, go to the beach or whatever. They still want to earn decent money, but a big part of the lure of our competition is the fact that it's played in some of the most beautiful places in the world. And the players from overseas absolutely look forward to that, particularly in a traditional CPL year where all the islands are visited and where there are breaks between games, sometimes as many as 2-3 days between matches, where guys have a chance to really, unwind and relax in what is usually a grueling schedule of cricket. So, yes, it can be a challenge, Andrew, but, again, it always comes down to the economics of it, right? Our franchise is willing to, as a league, can we? And it's something that we look at continuously each year. But we might not, certainly, we won't match the IPL. And we might not even be able to get halfway to where they are. But even if we can't, we still have the lure of this region in our back pocket. And that's something no other T20 league can boast.
Well, you've been involved in the CPL for a long time, and I think you've seen it all and heard it all. But what are these specific new concerns that you may have gleaned this year from franchise cricket, or the cricketers, the franchises, or the fans, or the logistical crew, the camera, all the facets of the CPL? What are the new things that have been brought to your attention that you've learned that you need to look at for the next tournament?
Well, look, although I only got back home on Saturday night, and I'm actually in state-imposed isolation in my own home, thankfully. Preparation for next year's tournament probably begins, you know, next week, Monday. You know, our senior group will sit down and look back at what happened, look and see how we can tweak things. We do that every year. You know, I don't want to make it seem as if we're complacent. The truth of the matter is that there isn't a lot, I think, that needs to be changed. I don't think there's a lot that needs to be changed. Obviously, you know, the biggest learning experience this year for us was how to stage a tournament in the middle of a pandemic. I think the good news about that is, you know, if it's the will of the universe that COVID-19 is going to play a big part in our lives again next year, this time, we are ahead of the curve. You know, we set the trend. We made the template for doing it. And I think that we will be in a much better place in terms of organizing for a tournament in a scenario like this. And it has also taught us, if we go back to normalcy, and we, you know, I alluded to it in the earlier part of the discussion, that perhaps we need to think about reducing things on the cost side of our equation by condensing the number of venues that the tournament is staged in. So,
okay, thanks, Andrew.
Big concern. The pitches. I mean, that has been a big concern. In fact, Sir Andy Roberts. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard him today. He was very critical of the pitches. Is this a very big concern for CPL? I mean, in one match, the defending champions, the Trident, sat three consecutive games making less than 100. The pitches, big concern.
Well, I don't know about. I'm not so sure about that, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Look, let's put it in perspective, eh? At the Branlar Cricket Academy, we had a total of 23 games, 10 in a 7-day period, a break for a week when the games shifted to Queen's Park Oval, and then 13 in about an 11-day period. I'm not sure that grounds in the Caribbean have ever before been asked to withstand that level of use in such a concentrated period of time. I personally want to say, or as we say in Jamaica, I personally want to big up a gentleman by the name of Dave Agnew, who is our pitch consultant. He actually works for Mark Parham, who is our pitch consultant. Mark didn't come, Dave came. And Dave was in charge of overseeing the preparation and maintenance of the square and the outfield at the Branlar Cricket Academy. Mm-hmm. Yes, the scores this year were a bit lower. And I'm going to come to the Queen's Park Oval in a minute. Sure. But this year were a bit lower. And I think that I wouldn't be too quick to blame the pitches. I think that whenever something goes wrong and a T20 game is played, and somebody doesn't score 190 or 200, he said the pitch is not good. Everyone that came to the CPL this year, in terms of the cricketers, the majority of them, anyway, came there rusty. Certainly rusty insofar as T20 cricket is concerned. But they were asked to, and I'm speaking more of the batsmen now, but they were asked to face up to some of the best spin bowlers in the world. Young Mujib, Imran Tahir, Sandeep Lamichani, you know, Narayan. So the batsmen were always, in my view, going to be at a disadvantage. They had no rhythm, they hadn't come into the competition with any cricket under their belt. And I don't know if you watched the NFL, Andrews, but at the start of the season, defense is always, you know what I mean? The offense just hasn't gotten a chance to get in sync and to click and so on. So I think that's a problem that befell the batsmen at the CPL this year. I'm not going to lay too much blame on the pitches. I mean, some teams that struggled to score 19 a match did so against a team that had just made 170, you know, and they didn't change pitches in the interval. So I'm not going to blame the pitches just yet. Was the CPL as a league particularly or happy with the quality of the pitch square at Queen's Park Oval? No. I'm not saying anything that I haven't said to the Queen's Park Cricket Club formally already. So I have no qualms about saying it on your program. Mm-hmm. We weren't particularly happy with the preparation of that pitch square. You know, I think it showed. Notwithstanding Nicholas Puran's brilliant century of 45 balls on a wicket that was turning square almost from the first over. But that's just because he's you know, the young man is that good. So, look, it was a bit of a mixed bag. And again, I don't know that the curator at Queen's Park Oval, who didn't take a lot of direction from Dave, and that's just the nature of his personality. I don't know that he would have had too much experience in trying to create a pitch square that could stand up to 10 games in a 5-day period. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, as I say, it was a mixed bag. I thought the wicket at Brian Lara held up very well. And again, you know, I thought that the batsmen were just a little bit short in their ability to adapt and to deal with some of the really good spin bowling that was on show. I see my good friend Philo Wallace there adjusting his spectacles.
Yes, yeah. Good old Philo.
Andrew.
Hello, Philo. How are you doing? Nice to see you.
Hello, Andrew. Good evening.
Good evening to you. And of course, Doc, do you have a follow-up question? We got Joseph Redspur as well on the line. I'm sure he's got one or two concerns. But quickly, Doc, in terms of the pitches, any questions?
The pitches, you know, I'm kind of moving off the pitches because I accept what Mr. Hall has said. But I think it's important for other venues to understand why Trinidad and Tobago is out front and the preferred venue for semifinals and finals. So many times in the seven years you've been operating, what is it that Trinidad is able to do?
Right.
That what package is Trinidad able to offer that the other venues are unable to match? Considering their pitches are not well suited to T20 cricket, you know, in its purest.
Mm. Well, look. Let's look at some stats really quickly. In 2019, the five home games that TKR played at the Queen's Park Oval, I think the average innings scored there was in excess of 170, somewhere around 172. Mm-hmm. This year it was 131. And I believe that was a combination of the fact that the square there was not particularly well prepared, as well as the shortcomings of batsmen, as I have described them in the previous answer. You ask a question, what's Trinidad able to offer? Look, I'm not part of the negotiation or the deal making, but I do like to try and keep informed about everything that happens around the league. And I suspect it's a couple of factors. You know, I mean, outside of Guyana, the atmosphere at the Queen's Park Oval and the Brian Lara Cricket Academy, the atmosphere in Trinidad generally is tremendous and sort of best describes the whole vibe of the Caribbean Premier League. I think also, as it always does, it has something to do with the financial package that the government of Trinidad and Tobago offers the league to host the semifinals and the finals. I think this year, 2020, would have been the third and final year of whatever deal existed. So I don't think there's any guarantee that we're going to be back in Trinidad for the semis and finals next year. And as always, I think it's open to any country in which a franchise is domiciled to put in an offer or to put their hat in the ring to see whether or not they want to host, you know, the playoffs and final of the Caribbean Premier League. So it remains to be seen where we will go next year. I mean, you know, I think that Trinidad was sort of lent itself as being the best venue for the tournament to be staged this year, given the fact that they do have two, you know, internationally accredited venues. And on top of that, I think that they might have been the only country that expressed a genuine interest from early on in possibly staging the tournament this year. So I think that they were ahead of the pack in that regard.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've been joined, of course, by Stephen Leslie, Director of Cricket in Barbados. And, of course, he's going to offer his perspectives in relation to the CPL. He's going to talk local cricket as well. We also have noted journalist Fazia Mohammed and soon-to-be attorney at law, Philo Wallace. And, of course, on the line is Joseph Reds Pereira.
Oh, dear.
Yes, indeed. So if you get into any trouble, Michael, you've got Philo to be your attorney. But let's go to...
Well, I've always known that Philo has been called to many bars, but I didn't know this one. Andrew, sorry, if you'll permit me just a little bit of housekeeping to
sure.
Stephen Leslie, I am going to send you that email, sir. I am going to send you that email. Thank you.
Is it preparing Barbados for the semifinals and the finals next year, Stephen?
No, it's not, Andrew. It's very important. Requests, and Michael, as he said, will organize it in due course.
All right. Let's go to St. Lucia, the veteran Red Spurrier. Reds, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm fine. COVID manners. You know, at my age, you don't run rush around. Not as young as you are.
Right.
But I take just about everything that Michael have said. But because the Queen's Park Oval was turning, as everybody saw, I felt that having stated that the players were undercooked, everybody was undercooked, rusty, it really meant that every effort should have been made, even if you have to ask the groundsman at the Queen's Park Oval to step aside. Mm. Every effort should have been made to get the batting conditions as good as you could, as pro batting as you could in the circumstances. I don't know if Michael, in a short yes or no, will respond.
Michael?
Yeah, look, Reg, I definitely take your point, but getting the head curator at the Queen's Park Cricket Club to step aside is perhaps easier said than done.
Oh dear!
Notwithstanding that we did, you know, rent the venue and so on. And I mentioned before that, you know, I have no qualms about saying that we weren't happy with the wicket at Queen's Park Oval, because we've said so to them, or we've said as much to them. I don't want to get too much further into it, but let's just say that our displeasure was presented in the strongest possible terms, and leave it at that for the moment.
All right.
Yeah, Michael.
You like that, Philip?
Yes, Red.
Yeah, looking forward to 2021. Let us say that COVID will still be around, and we face the same situation health-wise for the players and officials. The Providence ground is around the corner to an international hotel. I can say it the other way around. Have that thought passed through you, that Providence could maybe offer a bubble? They wouldn't have two venues, which I would admit straight away. But with the facility just 3 minutes, if that long, away from Providence, if the arrangements are made with the Ghana authority, the money is no doubt another factor. But just on the idea of turning that into a bubble, any thoughts on that, Michael?
Look, Reds, certainly, I mean, I don't see why not. I would suggest to you that the Princess Hotel, which is, as you mentioned, a couple of meters away from the ground in Ghana, could probably stand for a little bit of a refurb and upgrade. But yes, I mean, it would lend itself very well to being a possible bubble situation. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. It would be the closest thing that we have in the Caribbean to what existed, you know, in Manchester and Southampton when the West Indies were in England, in that the ground was attached to the hotel. This would be as close to it as we could get anywhere in the Caribbean, I would think. So, yes, it certainly would be a viable option.
No,
and maybe with all the oil money in Ghana now,
Right. That's going to be very difficult. Just to get a perspective, just before you come back in Reds, we got Fazir Mohammed. We also have Phil Wallace and, of course, Stephen Lezzi. Let's go to you, Fazir, and then after you, Phil Wallace. Your overall assessment, Fazir Mohammed, of T20, the T20 in Trinidad and Tobago. Are you happy, Fazir?
Well, I suppose happy in the sense that they were able to ensure that the bubble was not violated to any significant degree where it would have jeopardized the tournament. I think more than anything else, that was the biggest challenge. And yes, there are obvious concerns about the pitch. I mean, we all recall the T20 International way back in 2010 at Queen's Park Oval, where Zimbabwe got just about 102 and the West Indies could only match 81 for 9 on a raging turnip.
Yes.
So there have been these situations before, and I know no one would be happy with that. And I'm sure Michael and the CPL people are probably behind closed doors have made their views quite clear as to how much it would have detracted as a spectacle. Yet, again, take it for what it's worth. It was on that same track that we saw the Trinbago Knight Riders push to the very limits, and they were able to pull off that thrilling victory. You saw Nicholas Puran getting 100. So there are many sides to different issues, and I don't think we could ever pretend that anytime you play in Trinidad and Tobago, given the nature of the pitches and the soil, that you're not going to get the nice, even-paced, hard, bouncy track that you want to get where 240 plays against 220 or anything like that. And I think overall, while the standard of cricket may not have been the most attractive, I think the most important thing from a CPL point of view and a marketing of CPL point of view is that they were able to stage the tournament without any real hitch from a COVID-19 perspective. And they were seen by the biggest audience in world cricket. And from that point of view, it would have to be seen as a success.
Just before we go to Philo, what's this thing about the groundsman being stubborn? You know anything about that, Fazir?
Well, groundsmen are always stubborn. I don't know which groundsman is going to happily hand over his responsibilities for a pitch. I wouldn't imagine Hendy Bryan be saying, okay, well, here's Kensington Oval. You do whatever you want with it, because clearly you're telling me I don't know what I'm doing. But these are things that I'm sure are going to have to be sorted out when you think ahead, when you're looking ahead to a 2021, to a 2022, and so on. But it's not surprising to me to know that the people were particularly reticent to allow others to prepare the surface, because people are very thin-skinned, you know, and especially in this place called the Caribbean. It is one of the things you learn as you travel through the Caribbean and engage with different individuals. It's amazing how people who are world beaters in their own right as cricketers can be basically the equivalent of eggshells when it comes to their egos. It's as simple as the reality of the Caribbean.
Let's go to Philo Wallace now, former West Indies hard-hitting batsman. Philo, your overall assessment of the CPL this year?
Andrew, good evening to you and your listeners. I look at CPL, Andrew, from Michael Hall's perspective, I see CPL was a success. Success in their eyes. To me, I look at CPL as not really bringing up what we expect to talent of West Indies cricket. Mind you, it's only T20 cricket. But I was still hoping to see better performances. I know their criticism about the surfaces. I'm disappointed in Queen's Park Oval, because I rate the goals for that Queen's Park Oval quite highly. He was at UTT, he was at Braillard Stadium, and he's a good groundsman. So something had to be very, very wrong that the pitches were so poor at the Queen's Park Oval. But you expected to get the pitches would have obviously worn as the tournament went on, because there's so many matches on two grounds. But I think that when we look at it, to me, I didn't see that real zest from a former CPL they saw in 2020. Obviously, there were no spectators, so they'd be low-key. There's a pandemic around, and the players getting there and being there was quite a massive, massive achievement. I think not having any and anyone tested positive while the tournament was going on. After the tournament was fantastic. But I think the brand of cricket was not as exciting, even though there were no spectators, as we really expected. A lot of low scores, a lot of disappointments as well, in relation to the type of cricket that we saw from these various franchises. And it's something, obviously, that I believe needs to be better for 2021.
Mm-hmm. From the point of view of an administrator, Stephen, you're the director of cricket in Barbados. Your assessment of the tournament?
First, I'd like to congratulate Michael and the entire team for being able to stage a successful tournament. As he said earlier, as it relates to not having any COVID-19 positive cases being detected. And one must appreciate that globally, there were a number of international sports that were either suspended or postponed during this period when CPL was actually being able to execute as it did in Trinidad. And I sometimes, we in the Caribbean, take things for granted. I think we are so much used to being dominant in international cricket. So when you hear someone like Philo or even Fazir speak about the lack of what you would consider high quality performances, you would appreciate that the quality of the players would not have been as it could have been. Now, the interesting view from an administrative point of view, and I like to, you know, just suppose Barbados was in a position to host. Barbados has two venues here at Kensington, and we also have the 3Ws Oval, who have the statuses that will match that in Trinidad. We're not obviously speaking about the other areas or the interest that Michael spoke about that Trinidad would have expressed earlier, because there are a lot of other factors that would have allowed the games to be played in Trinidad. But if you had had those games in Barbados, I would suggest that the scores might have been much better. Not much better because the ground staff in Barbados are necessarily of a high quality. High quality groundsmen are also across the Caribbean, they're in Trinidad. But the surfaces, the type of soil that you have in Barbados will lend to more stroke play. You find, certainly, there's a, you know, this, I don't want to use the word myth, but there's this, you know, concept that sometimes when you play at the 3Ws Oval, that the pitch spins a bit. But it wouldn't certainly have spun as much as you saw at Queen's Park over in Trinidad. And my view is that if you had just supposed the tournament being played in Barbados, that we would have been able, I believe, to see a more, you know, consistency in terms of the scores that would have been made. However, we played in Trinidad. Michael and his team, they said, have to be highly commended. And the product that was actually put out, you know, you had Nicholas Pooran and one or two others showing some really good ability and good performances. Kyle Mears in the earlier part of the tournament was quite good. And that is, I would think, food for thought for some persons who are in the Caribbean. Now, my guarded position as an administrator is I would not want selectors to ever want to gauge the quality of RT20 product based on the tournament in Trinidad from the perspective that a lot of these guys were asked to do things that they have never been asked to do before. They would have been asked, as you'll recall, to have a period prior to playing any matches, being in a bubble. And the couple of persons that you had on your show during the course of that pre-tournament phase, and certainly when the tournament started, were always speaking about the difficulty that they had. Certainly, you know, having somebody to knock on your door three times a day to give you a meal, etc. So you've got to realize that there's a lot of psychological and adjustment that the players had to make. And then it was alleged, I mean, Michael probably could confirm it when he speaks again, but the number of practice sessions leading into the tournament, again, too, were very limited because of that quarantine, self-isolation period. Then it was a very short period before the actual matches started. So you would have heard Jason Holder, Riyad Emery, and other captains at times speak. I remember Robin Powell, for example, as captain, speaking about the fact that they would have had their full first session and sometimes one or two games had already been played in the tournament. So all those factors really would have contributed to what you would have seen on the field of play. We as Caribbean people might say, well, you play 5 or 6 T20 games, you should be hitting your straps. But then you have to realize too that there's still, again, the whole arrangement that was made, that persons were still very much confined to, even though they were relieved a bit, they still had a bit of security around them. They had to move in a different, or what I would say, a new normal. And I really want to say to those who would have executed well for CPL, that I think Michael used the phrase that they would have put a template for the future. I think that what we've done in the Caribbean must be highly commended. And we must be able to ensure that we let everybody, we must shout loudly. IPL has the big bucks, and IPL will most likely be able to execute a tournament that has a little bit more fanfare. But look at what CPL did. Not a single positive case during that tournament. We have to keep our fingers crossed and look and see what might obtain when it comes to the IPL. So full marks, and I'm very pleased with what I was able to see from the administrative point of view.
Mm-hmm. Doc?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Stephen has been quite accurate. I think if we look at all the aspects of it, I think that the lowest mark, but from the great execution, that's a very high mark. From the interest and the viewership, I guess a very high mark. The commentary maybe wasn't as good as it usually is because there may have been restrictions. And also, I don't think all the commentators knew a lot about all of the players, and maybe sometimes they seem to be a knowledge gap in areas while there was an excessive knowledge for some other players. But all in all, I think it's a good effort. It would have been easy for CPL to call off the tournament. That would have been a lot easier to do. But I can understand the loss of a year may have been too big a gamble and a loss for the organization itself. But I think a lot should be learned, and I think the franchises will have an idea of how to be more efficient and to do more. But when we look at the top 10 run getters in CPL, you notice that most of them are the who's who of the West Indies T20 setup, in spite of the surfaces not being what we would expect them to be. And also most of the bowlers that did well are bowlers that are in our setup already, you know, Keswick Williams and Narain and Holder and some of the others. So still, in spite of the deficiencies as far as the concern, we can see that the better players in the long run still rose to the top. Our main limitation is that as the only form for T20 players to prove themselves for international play, our choice of surface for this tournament bears no relationship to the upcoming T20 World Cup. And I think that's the unfortunate aspect of the whole thing. But we do have time to prepare, and you know, I have to still give the CPL some credit for being able to successfully host the tournament.
Fazir, what were your major concerns about CPL 2020? Your major concerns?
Well, we've gone over it already. I mean, the fact is that it is billed as the biggest party in sport. And when you have an environment with no spectators, it makes it very difficult. It's a simple matter that I think what you appreciate when you have an environment of major international sport without fans, as we've had over the last few months now, you really begin to appreciate how much it matters when you have spectators. I mean, you can pipe in the sound and you can do all of that to try to create that vibe, but it just isn't the same thing. I mean, you can have a thrilling Premier League football game that could finish 5-4 and it still doesn't feel, you don't get that vibe if you don't have the sound of the fans and so on. And this is a reality. You can't really do anything about it. So you're already in the minus in that regard when it comes to capturing the whole essence of the Caribbean. And given these limitations, you've got to make the best of the situation. And yes, the situation with the pitches as well would have detracted from the spectacle also. But again, even if you have people blazing it over the top and somebody gets 260 and another one chases it down with one ball to go, even if that would happen, with no fans in the stands, you almost can't even tell that it was happening. And this is a reality. And that's why I think that at the end of the day, whatever those various limitations, I think it's a tremendous achievement by the CPL and by all involved in putting this thing together. And it says a lot about our organizational abilities in the Caribbean. Not just Trinidad and Tobago. This is not just a Trinidad and Tobago thing. Mm-hmm. This is a Caribbean thing, and with all the international expertise as well. I think it says a lot for us that we've been able to put this together. Because, look, for example, IPL, Suresh Raina has gone home. Parbhajan Singh has gone home because they are concerned about their own safety in the IPL bubble. And you're talking about the richest environment in world cricket. So I think, while yes, we might want to look at the negatives and so on, and there are a lot that we could look at, much of that was way beyond the control because there was something called COVID-19, which has never been experienced in our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're not going to keep Michael Hall too much longer. I know he's got to go and get his ackee and saltfish before he goes to bed, or his liver and banana, or his cocoa soup. So we're going to certainly say good evening to you. I don't know if Fazer or maybe Philo or even Dr. Ford, you got a final question for Michael before he goes? Can we start with you, Fazer? Any questions for
I would
Michael?
Like to just start.
Okay, yes, Fazer.
Philo, obviously with this year's yes, Michael, with this CPRT 20 tournament being what it was, your take tanks are going to start working for 2021. What are the positives that you're going to take from this 2020 tournament that you can use maybe in 2021 and beyond? Because you've set a template. And now there's something that is there to build on.
Well, Phil, I think I can only answer that question in this way. If 2021 comes around and we are still operating in the same environment, then there are lots of positives that we can take from what we were able to achieve this year and try to build on. If the Lord smiles on us and we don't have to operate in this environment again next year, then if I'm totally honest with you, there's very little I would want to take from this year and carry forward to next. This year was truly an aberration. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily want us to play another tournament in an environment like this. If we have to, then fine, we've done it before and we know that we can do it, and so we'll do it again and try to improve as best as we can. But to take anything specific forward from this year's tournament, I'm not so sure I would want to do that unless COVID-19 was still around.
All right, Michael, thanks very much for coming through and talking to us.
I've got one question, Andrew.
Yeah.
I have one, Andrew.
Here's a quick question.
Oh.
Michael, it was alleged that the Trinbago Knight Riders had the opportunity to train and practice more than the other teams. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, look, that's accurate because it happened by circumstance and certainly not by design. The Trinidad and Tobago Knight Riders franchise is comprised by and large of residents of Trinidad and Tobago. I think in their 17-man squad, they probably have, I don't know, as many as 11 or 12 Trinidadian nationals. They also have their team manager, who is a Trinidadian, and one of their coaches, Imran Jan, who is a Trinidadian. Remember that in the lead up to the Caribbean Premier League, before anyone who was coming from outside got there, Trinidad had no active cases of the coronavirus, had none for about 80 days. And so there was nothing that would have precluded the residents of Trinidad and Tobago who play for TKR from training, which they did. Now, let's bear in mind that there are many other Trinidadian residents who play for other franchises. Quite a few were on the St. Kitts Patriots team, for example. And they would also have been training and playing as well. Nicholas Puran, who represents the Guyana franchise. So yes, the TKR team or the majority of them would have been able to train more than the other teams, simply by virtue of the fact of them being resident in Trinidad and Tobago. Again, that's by circumstance and certainly not by design.
All right. Well,
Andrew.
Yes. A quick one, Reds.
Yes. Michael, were you limited to the number of umpires you could have gotten into Trinidad for the CPL? And were they under pressure because of the constant having to officiate, where if you had an extra two or extra three, as you normally would have, was there a little bit of pressure on the umpires, Mike?
There was pressure on everybody involved in the tournament, Reds, and I think the challenge for the match officials were no less than the challenge for the players. They too would have been rusty. And match officials also benefit from repetition and getting in a groove. I would like to say that generally we thought that the standard of umpiring was very good in this tournament. There were a couple of decisions which were, regrettable, perhaps, is a nice way to say it. But that happens everywhere in cricket. It's going to stand out more here in the Caribbean Premier League because we did not employ the DRS, and perhaps that's something that we would want to revisit for next year's tournament. We've had it before, and perhaps we should get it back again this year. I want to say quickly, Reds, that there was an umpire in this tournament. I don't like to single out people normally, but there was an umpire in this tournament who was making his debut in our tournament, and his name is Dighton Butler from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And he only took part in the tournament because Patrick Gustard from Jamaica was not able to come. He had been selected. And by the way, our local umpires are picked for the CPL in consultation with Cricket West Indies and based on their own rankings, which they compiled over the course of the previous 12 months. Dighton Butler was not in the top six, but when Gustard dropped out, he became his replacement. And Dighton Butler, I think, had an excellent tournament. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why he was rewarded with being named to officiate in the final. We've normally brought in overseas umpires, and I have always advocated for us not to do so, if I'm honest, because this is the Caribbean Premier League, and I think it should provide an opportunity for more Caribbean people to be employed, to showcase their skills, and to be seen by a global audience. And I'm going to continue to try to strive for us having only West Indian officials officiating our tournament.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks you, Michael, for spending the last, 45 minutes with us. Enjoy the rest of your evening. All right.
Thank you, sir. I've gone for some oxtail. Good night, everybody.
All right. Some good old oxtail. Yes, indeed. All right. Interestingly enough, we're going to have someone who actually played, was out there at the Queen's Park Old and Brandauer Stadium. Kyle Mears has joined us. He was with the Barbados Tridents. And Kyle, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening to you, Mr. Mason, and all the rest.
All right, great. All right, so you got Fazer Muhammad. I'm sure you know him. Doesn't speak good things about you, so don't know Fazer. Of course, you've got Dr. Andrew Ford. You know him well. And, of course, Director of Cricket in Barbados, Stephen Leslie. And very soon we're going to be talking to Dominic Warren, because we want to get a perspective from Cricket West Indies as to how they felt about the CPL. And of course, Betway has come on board, and I see that CPL is now launching the virtual foundation course. So we're going to be talking to Dominic Warren very soon. But let's go to you, Kyle, as a player. How did you find the CPL this year?
I mean, it was a bit different. Obviously, from years that I played before, it was more challenging, for sure, being in one place, playing at two grounds. Obviously, you know, the pitches weren't all the best for batsmen, but it was quite challenging, especially with the bubble as well. Flying from England, spending 2 days home, then straight to Trinidad. It was tough mentally, honestly, but as a professional, as I said before, in our last talk, you know, you got to adapt. This could be the new normal.
Mm. And the Tridents didn't do too well. Can you explain to us why the Tridents didn't do well?
I can't really talk for everybody, but at the end of the day, it's just cricket. I just thought that we didn't finish off the games well. We were in positions to win a lot of games, and we threw them away. So I guess when you shoot yourself in the foot, these things happen.
I see. Well, Dominic Warren, Commercial Director, of course, of Cricket West Indies, is with us. Dominic, good evening to you. And certainly you would want to offer your perspective as in relation to how it went as far as Cricket West Indies is concerned. Dominic, were you happy with CPL 2020?
Good evening, everyone. I think the first thing should be said about CPL is that what has been done with the CPL has been fantastic, to put it on in such a short period of time and to turn it around. Everyone will have a different experience, but the Caribbeans now are sort of leading light in terms of being able to put on a major cricket tournament in an environment that no one's ever experienced before. So I think everyone should be really proud of that, the way that everyone has come together, from teams, committees, umpires, groundsmen, to prepare pitches and broadcast and everything else under very trying circumstances. You know, everyone should be proud of that. It is very, very difficult indeed, and I know that from plenty of experience. So you're always going to get things that, you know, come unstuck a little bit when time is against you and you don't have the perfect preparation. But everyone's talking about Caribbean cricket. Everyone around the world is looking at Caribbean cricket, and it's one of those things that, along with the England series, that certainly Kyle got the opportunity to go out and be part of the of that elite training setup there in terms of the support team. We've been able to do things from Cricket West Indies' perspective, and indeed the wider stakeholder cricket perspective, that other countries aren't able to do. And that will stand us in good stead, whatever happens, whether that's economically, and whether that's in terms of cricket development, or whether that's just in terms of building our own expertise to actually share that with the rest of the world. And actually, that's one of the things people are coming to Cricket West Indies now, because we have an experience and we have expertise that other countries and other cricketing nations don't have at the moment. So everyone should feel well done. And of course, congratulations to TKR for, you know, fantastic performance throughout the tournament itself.
I know that the contract with Cricket West Indies, I think, is about 50 years. I'm sure Fazil will confirm this because he was part of the negotiations. But is there any possibility, and I know that Director of Cricket in Barbados, Stevens, Leslie, always talks about a Caribbean T20. Do you think that it will be generous and say, look, we know that exclusive, of course, is the CPL, but is there any possibility at all that going forward we have a Caribbean T20? Is that possible at all? Dominique?
I think to some extent, I think we have one, and it's on our doorstep. So obviously, what happened with the CWI and the CPL discussions, however many years ago it was, you know, you got a tournament that's a very, very good product. Cricket West Indies maintains a shareholding in it, and obviously, all of the territorial boards in the region and Cricket West Indies have a very deep interest in terms of what goes on with T20 cricket, because we've been so good at it as a cricketing organisation in terms of the individuals coming through. So who knows? I mean, you can always say one thing and nothing happens. I think CPL developed a good product. They're looking to strengthen it. They've got their own development objectives. I think one of the great things that has been good from a cricketing perspective, not that that's my remit, but what Jimmy Adams is our director of cricket, working with our cricket committee to make sure we've got starting roles for the emerging players, and playing at least 5 games is great, because then you've got those players getting that that high pressure game time and training and playing with, you know, some of the leading T20 cricketers in the world. So that is fantastic. So there's a lot of development going on, and, you know, you'll have to see what happens in the future, but certainly there's a very, very long agreement in place, and I don't necessarily envisage that changing anytime soon. I mean, there's plenty of things to do at the moment, certainly with the COVID situation, that we need to sort out before any conversations would even step over our threshold on something like that.
Fazir, it was a rather generous contract, wasn't it, Fazir, 50 years?
Yeah, well, we all know what happened then, way back in 2013, and in the aftermath of the Caribbean T20, you had a contract signed for 50 years. I mean, who does that in any international sporting organisation? And that itself is something that I suppose the president of Cricket West Indies at the time, Dr. Julian Hunt, will have to answer for, if he ever feels it appropriate to answer. But in response to Dominic's point, I mean, let's face it, is it really practical to have a Caribbean T20 and a CPL in a place like the Caribbean, where it's so expensive to stage any tournament? And indeed, with the congested international schedule, where are you going to find the space to accommodate a territorial Caribbean T20 and a CPL as well? And let's not forget that when this tournament started in 2013, after Trinidad and Tobago had taken a hat-trick of T20 titles, there was strident opposition to it in Trinidad and Tobago. The feeling was that this was the rest of the Caribbean ganging up on Trinidad and Tobago to destroy their domination of the tournament. Yet the stadiums were full for every match played by what was then the Trinidad Tobago Red Steel.
Yes.
And you have everyone celebrating TKR's victory right now. So people have very, very short memories. And once the cricket is of a sufficient standard, they will forget about all of these island rivals. Remember people making noise at Bridgetown about Kyron Pollard, the captain of the Barbados Tridents. And the ground was absolutely packed out for the first few matches in 2013. And it remained that way because fans will gravitate towards good cricket. And generally, despite all of the challenges of 2020, we've predominantly had good cricket, good tournaments. And let's not forget as well that if you go back to territory versus territory, you'll actually have few of your players involved.
Mm-hmm.
You have players involved, whether it's from Barbados, playing for other franchises, playing for many other franchises. So you actually have more players from your territories playing CPL cricket than if it were Caribbean T20.
Mm. No.
But if I may very quickly, Andrew.
Yes.
If I may very quickly, because you did highlight the fact that it's important that the whole concept of the Caribbean T20 is reconsidered. I didn't want to have Fazira and anybody else think that we wanted to be played in conjunction with CPL. The point that is being made is that CPL has a franchise model which, in my view, has not been able to expose the best T20 cricketers that play their trade in the Caribbean. And I'll give an example of Barbados. Barbados started a T20 domestic tournament back in 2009, I believe it was. And every year there are some persons who contribute very well. There's a Roshan Primus, for example, who does extremely well in our local tournament. Now, the opportunity for Roshan Primus to be selected, I'm not so sure that there's that level of transparency. Simply put, you can have young on 19 West Indies players being given an opportunity to be in the franchises because they were on a global stage. You can have the West Indies emerging players from the Super 50 who did very well being given an opportunity to play T20 cricket. But what happens to those local Barbadian T20 cricketers and the Trinidadians and across the region who play their trade and play consistently well within their respective domestic tournaments? I believe that there's very little for those persons. And I can go through, and I wouldn't want to do it on this program, a myriad of players since CPL has started that had been introduced, who, when you compare them to some of the more talented and high-performing T20 cricketers across the region, that they can't be compared. And Philo will know, for example, that when you've got organized cricket, whether it's in Trinidad, whether it's in Guyana, whether it's in Barbados, these young men still need to have an opportunity to be able to feel that they can get the CPL. Right now, I believe that is a closed-door arrangement. I do not know what level of involvement Cricket West Indies has, that they can do a similar model that insists that the West Indies emerging players for the Super 50, or they can do probably a similar model to pull some of those talented players together. But right now, a lot of these players are lost.
Oh, dear. That's a big statement to make. Philo, you want to react to what Fazir or Stephen said?
Well, actually, when you look at it, there are a lot of talented players coming through West Indies cricket. Now, on the 19 squads are producing volumes of young talent. And Stephen mentioned one of my favorites, Roshan Primus, who has been ignored across the region. What are you going to do with someone but him? What can be done to help him? And Cricket West Indies, for me, they need to start letting CPL know that there's something out there called talent that needs to be produced in this CPL cricket and needs to be recognized. There have to be some way in which our talented players get more opportunities. I'm not really a big fan of the T20 format, but it's there. And we have to work with it. We have to make it work for Cricket West Indies.
Mm.
And that is why I might beef about CPL. That CPL has to benefit Cricket West Indies in all facets, across all facets of cricket. So if there's a policy between the Cricket West Indies and CPL for emerging players, I'm all for it. But our emerging players need to be given the opportunities. There have to be that balance. We've seen it in the APL. And we need to see it in our CPL. Maybe get that balance right. So more talent can come through, Andrew. We can't allow to have the so-called stars continue to dominate. And there's a lot of talented players there who I believe, once they're given the opportunities, can push those big stars and let them know, look, I'm the new shining light that can come through. Mm-hmm. But opportunities need to be given. The windows are short, so it's going to be a big problem. But there must find a way to get it done.
Fazir.
Andrew, if I could come in with a final comment, because I have...
I know you've got to leave soon, yeah.
Just in relation to that. But thanks, guys, for accommodating me to have the discussion. But I think Philo, more than anyone else, will recognize the challenges that we face when we're talking about a franchise tournament, because you're trying to get the big international players to attract television audiences as well. Because remember, was the Caribbean T20 making any money for West Indies cricket? No. Was it just a drain on the resources? So yes, I take Philo's point. I take Stephen's point. They're very valid observations about bringing that talent to the fore. But if it's always at a consistent loss, if it is that you're not making any money at all, and how do you sustain it? And that is the challenge for all of us in West Indies cricket. How do we find a model that is sustainable, financially sustainable, that will allow our youthful talent to get that opportunity, to get that foot in the door, to be seen by a global audience and really get that chance? Because at the end of the day, it's a business. And because we wouldn't like to be running a situation where you're losing money every single year, whatever the situation, because at some point you're going to have to decide, can we continue with this? Mm-hmm. So these are the harsh economic realities we face in the Caribbean as well. And I certainly take Stephen's point about the talent and fellow as well. But it's a very, very difficult situation we face in the most expensive part of the world when it comes to stage and cricket. But gentlemen, it's been a pleasure once again. Have a good evening, everyone. And I look forward to the continuation of the discussion.
All right. Well, Fazer, just before you go, Fazer, 30 seconds. I couldn't let you go. What's going on with your commission and your prime minister?
Yeah.
Fazer, what's going on down there? Your commission, your prime minister. They're fighting.
This is Trinidad and Tobago. I suppose the only thing interesting for Kyle being stuck in Trinidad and Tobago for as long as he was to see the bacchanal that goes on.
Yes.
This madhouse called Trinidad and Tobago. But I do see that the great little England is going to become a republic before independence. Yes, next year.
That is true. That was a big story. Big story. But you got to help Gary Griffith because he may lose his job, Fazer.
Well, Gary and I went to school together. So
yes.
We're similarly insane, I suppose.
All right. Fazer, it's always a pleasure to have you. And when we come back, of course, you may very well be the commissioner on the show. Wonderful work indeed, Fazer. We're going to, of course, get a comment and a reaction from Dominic Warren. We're going to talk about a couple of things. We've got to take a commercial break. And when we come back, I want to ask Kyle Mears about the pitches. He played in them. The pitches were not very good in terms of batting. But, of course, when we come back from a commercial break, we're also going to open the lines 4241790. Mason and Guest, this is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason. And, of course, co-host Dr. Andrew Ford. We've got on Zoom, director commercial director for Cricket West Indies, of course, Dominic Warren. We also have director of cricket in Barbados, Stephen Leslie. We also have cricketer Kyle Mears just coming out of the CPL. And we also have former West Indies hard-hitting batsman Philo Wallace. Now, Dominic, you heard the comments coming, of course, from Stephen Leslie. He still thinks there's room for a Caribbean T20. Must be expensive, though, I would imagine.
I think Fazer made a good point. Is that actually probably the bigger issue now at the moment is the whole international, is the international calendar and what that means for international player ability. The IPL sucks such a huge window out for every cricket organisation around the world, and it's just done it again. Whilst it does start to get cricket moving again economically in terms of distribution of funds, the fact that you've got an IPL in October, November this year, and then you're going to have another one again in April, May. Just essentially, you've removed 4 months of the year that no team can play international cricket. Mm. And that is a problem for everyone, even more so for the West Indies, because economically, that April, May window used to be such a prime window for us in terms of overseas tours. We don't need the tours in January, February, March, because from a tourism perspective, most of the tourist locations do very, very well. But that April, May window was fantastic, and we used to have some amazing tours there. So when you look at things like that, it's one of the things that has got to be resolved. There's a lot of work going on in terms of the ICC. You've got new people involved at the ICC. There's going to be various elections at the ICC. So hopefully there's going to be some good debate. Probably the next 3 years, very tough to fit anything in, particularly with COVID, because so much is going to have to be rescheduled. But following that, who knows? And I think The other thing we've got to be aware of as well is, and don't get me wrong, I think the T20 product is a good one, and actually getting the right structure for emerging talent to come through is absolutely important, as well as the fans' love of it. But we've also got to be careful that there's not a, you know, too much T20 cricket going on just in terms of on people's screens and TV, because people can get tired of a good product very quickly. Actually happened in England when they launched T20 back in, whenever it was, 2002, 2003. First 2 years were fantastic, but it tailed off quite quickly and it's taken a lot of work to get it back. So I think Fazeer said it's getting that balance right. I think when you've got a product that obviously Caribbean fans love and that Caribbean cricketers particularly excel in, then, you know, you want to make sure you're pushing that product as strongly as you can. And obviously by winning two back-to-back men's World Cups and a women's World Cup and performing pretty well anyway in T20s, it's something we want to keep an eye on. And commercially, it's successful as well. So how that cascades up and down is the most important thing with the international calendar. So I'm sitting on the fence, but you can hopefully see why in terms of the explanations I'm giving.
No, Kyle, just before you come in, Doc, I know you got a reaction as well. Kyle, the pitches, were they that difficult to bat on, Kyle?
To be honest, I don't think the pitches were devilish. I just thought it wasn't suited for T20 cricket stroke play. I mean, if it was a 50 over, you had time to spare at the crease and get in, and then, you know, finish the game or take on bowlers to the end of the innings, it would have been different. But T20, normally fast scoring kind of game, I thought it was hard for stroke play. So it had to, you know, you had to come with different tactics, set up the innings differently. It was something different. I mean, as I told you earlier, I don't think they were poor, but they were the normal type of T20 wickets. Mm-hmm. Hence, they had a lot of small scores in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Just do the comparison. Let's start with the Queen's Park Oval, and then we go to the Brian Lara Stadium in terms of the pitches. The Queen's Park Oval, very difficult
to battle? I thought Queen's Park was better in terms of bounce.
In terms of bounce?
The ball actually is fine, and the ball turned a lot at Queen's Park, but the bounce were more consistent than at Brian Lara Stadium. I thought the bounce at Brian Lara Stadium was not consistent. Mm. The ball was stopping more at Brian Lara Stadium than at Queen's Park, probably because the preparation at Brian Lara Stadium, they had more water in the pitches.
Okay, I see.
At Brian Lara Stadium than at Queen's Park.
No, I see.
So that was the difference.
Mm-hmm. Just explain, particularly for the Barbadian audience. I mean, you have three consecutive scores of under 95. What happened there, Kyle?
As I said, it was always difficult to bat first on a wicket that had in a lot of moisture.
Okay.
I guess we didn't approach it well. As I said, it was a tough wicket to score on. So obviously, going out and not assessing the conditions properly led us to score 90-odd in both of those games. That's the best way to put it. I mean, probably trying to be over-aggressive and not play smart cricket in terms of setting a smaller target, or whatever the case may be, probably was the downfall.
4341790, please give us a call and participate. We've got another half an hour left in the show. It's your time to give us a call. Of course, you would have questions for Kyle Mears. And of course, we also have Stephen Leslie, Director of Cricket. We've got also with us as well, Philo Wallace, who is a former West Indies hard-hitting batsman, and Dominic Warren, Commercial Director of Cricket West Indies. I know, Doc, you've got a question.
No, it was getting back to what Stephen was mentioning and Philo regarding some players not having a chance in the CPL, even though they may be considered to have the talent and the ability. I guess one way that this may happen, even though we'll never be able to have all the players that we want, would be for CPL to find their way through economic success to increase the number of franchises. But it could very well be that sometimes a cricketer who doesn't get a look in, even though they may have the ability, the cricketer's agent, we may be missing the what's happening behind the scenes with the agents trying to to make their charges appeal to the franchises and letting them know what they can do and bringing the facts and the stats and approaching different franchises, the captains. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, I'm sure, that we're not aware of. And maybe some players not making it might be a reflection of you know, having a weak agent or maybe not having an agent at all.
Mm. All right, let's
allow me very quickly, Andrew.
Okay, sure.
That's 30 seconds. We have witnessed CPL since its inception. And if you compare it to the IPL, you would have seen a strategy where there were a number of IPL or Indian players, younger players coming through or being placed in squads. They had this balance with the international cricketers, as everyone said, and it also had a certain level of youth and talented players. I have not, or I don't think anyone in this panel can say it, that they can see a strategy for CPL. And I believe that's where CWA and the respective territorial boards need to be able to speak with the CPL to know that our best players, young talented players, are also exposed in this franchise cricket.
All right, we got a call. I know Dominic's time is limited. We got to try and get one or two things in before he goes. But let's take our first call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest, 424-790. We don't have that call. All right, we're going to certainly come back to that call. You can call us at 424-790. Yes, I think we do have that call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening to you.
Well, I am one that would say I didn't enjoy the CPL.
You didn't enjoy the CPL?
And I will not congratulate Trinidad.
Why?
From the beginning, everything was biased.
Biased?
I heard Sammy even complaining, even before he started the tournament, he complained that everything was not a level playing field.
Mm.
And in my view, the commentaries were very poor. I could hear all the biasness.
Oh.
A lot of biasness was coming out of the commentators.
Oh, I see.
I heard a commentator declare Trinidad the winners even before the tournament finished.
Oh dear!
All these things like remark.
He was just making a prediction.
Pardon me?
He was just making a prediction based on what he would have seen before.
Well, let you say that again.
All right, thanks.
I definitely didn't enjoy it though.
All right, thanks for your contribution. No, Dominic, I know your time is limited. A couple of things. See, they're launching the first virtual foundation coaching course as part of the new cricket and player development pathway. Explain that.
Yeah, it's part of a new coaching and player development pathway that was launched earlier this year. We hired a new coaching development manager, a gentleman called Chris Bradson, who's working very closely with Jimmy Adams, our director of cricket, but also with franchise coaches all around the region. And for the first time, actually, this is we're doing virtual courses where we've got 70 contracted players from all across the region doing their foundation steps in coaching. So it started on Monday with men's and women's players for the West Indies. And then we've got all of the six territorial boards have got contracted players involved. There was a session today, then another one tomorrow and on Thursday. So it's essentially the players dipping their toe in the water into the first steps in coaching, helps us identify some of those potential coaches of the future. Once players stop coaching, but also for those players, helps them understand about community coaching when they're meeting schools, clubs, kiddie cricket activities, for example, and starting to understand more about nutrition, mental approach for players, as well as the technical and tactical aspects. So it'll be it's the start of the coaching program in terms of the start of that pathway, and in 2021 it'll be the first time that all of Cricket West Indies coaching is actually delivered by Cricket West Indies and Cricket West Indies partners in the region rather than external support from other cricketing boards. So it's exciting times that the coaching and player development is absolutely critical as part of our focus on cricket, obviously, first and foremost. And that cricket first approach is leading to this investment in that way.
And, of course, CWA and Betway and Noxin extended three-year partnership. Exciting news?
Yeah, it's fantastic news for us for several reasons. One, you know, they're one of the best betting companies in the world in terms of their brand and the integrity of their operation. Secondly, it shows that when we can start a relationship with a major international company like we did 2 years ago with Betway, we're able to build and develop that and allow us to, essentially it's a 3-year agreement. Obviously there hasn't been any cricket since February, March, so it would have kicked in earlier, but obviously we're now building up to looking to 2021 and some possible away tours at the end of this year. And thirdly, because it's quite a significant increase in investment as well, which we really appreciate with Betway. They've seen the value of our men's and women's product, so they've extended their support into the women's international matches and also to be the betting partner of Super 50 as well. So that's a level of investment. We know how tough it's been economically. We know that we are doing a lot to make a much more sustainable business model for cricket in the region, to invest in cricket. And that Betway investment is huge for us. So you'll see a lot of Betway, and we really appreciate that partnership. And we're hoping to announce more of those in the months ahead.
Just before you go, any possibility of any cricket at all coming up soon in the Caribbean? Anything at all for coming towards the end of the year, or early next year?
I think it's our number one priority to get cricket on. The opportunity for the men's team with the Test series, and obviously the women's team now preparing for their 5 T20s, which start next Monday, is huge. And again, it's something we've been able to do ahead of other organisations, and the expertise we're building around the biosecure aspect is really strong. We've got two fundamental issues, really. One is the COVID situation is changing all the time, and number two, with LIAP being grounded at the moment, it makes it very, very difficult for us to plan anything. We are leaving no stone unturned, and pretty much every day we are having scheduling conversations. We've probably got plan A to Z, not just plan A and B at the moment. So it's something we're looking to do. It's looking unlikely until the LIAP situation changes, because, you know, as Stephen will know, in terms of how we need to get teams around, to get teams and kit around, and in the case of Super 50 or the West Indies Championship, to get a minimum of 6 teams flying around, different pitches, kit, accommodation, and as well as the fact that in the likes of Guyana and Trinidad, some of the restrictions have had to become a bit tougher recently. It's just a moving feast, and, you know, everybody's trying. I think realistically we will have some away cricket, and then 2021 we are looking to have a very, very busy schedule, because we're going to have to reschedule a lot into a tight window. But that's where a lot of the player management will become really important, in terms of the players not getting worn out and making sure the product's good enough for TV and for the fans in the stadium. So lots to do. It's certainly been just as busy without cricket, trying to plan for all these situations, as it has been with cricket on. So, you know, it's exciting to try and plan it. And as soon as there's information, we'll let everyone know, because we know everyone's desperate for more cricket.
Dominic, thanks very much. I know your time is limited. You got another big interview, of course, so we're going to leave it there. And always good to have you on Mason and Guest.
Thanks right. for having me, Andrew.
Okay, there you go.
Good night, gentlemen.
We've got another 10 minutes left on the show. We got calls as well. People are calling 4-3-4-1-7-90. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Peace be unto you, Mr. Mason.
How are you?
All your distinguished guests.
Yes.
Giving thanks to the Creator for a wonderful day.
Wonderful.
Well, the caller before this last one, I totally agree with him and everything that he said. And you know, you all can't say anything. You all have to be biased, but it is true. But we've been made joy for night. Joy come up in the morning.
Joy come up in the morning, yes.
Patience, you have it next time.
Patience is bitter, but it's fruit so sweet. You ever heard that one, Stephen?
Yes. I was raised by a great aunt, so you know she would always give it the quotation.
And if you itch for success, then keep on scratching. You like that one, huh?
The dog would tell you that if you keep on scratching, it might get a cut.
No. Or you may have to go to the dermatologist, and he's a dermatologist.
Right, I know that. I work with him.
Yes. Well, Kyle Mears is with us, and Kyle.
I heard Kyle.
Well, Kyle is saying it was a little difficult in terms of the balance. Thanks for your contributions.
You're welcome.
A lot of people are calling. We're going to try to get as many calls in as possible. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guests. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Keep calling. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Who do you have there? Ronnie? Yes, hello, welcome.
Yes. I just want to call to talk about the CPL for a moment.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I do believe that CPL was very boring this year. It was not as interesting. I do agree that it has a lot to do with the pitches that were prepared. I understand, to be fair, that we wanted cricket so bad that we had to find a way, at Trinidad being one of the only countries with two cricket grounds, that made it possible. But I think that there is enough, how to put it, there's enough knowledge about pitch preparation and all that sort of stuff that we could have had better pitches, similar to even the pitch that we had in the final. I think the pitch in the final looked and played much better, in my opinion, than most of the pitches that we had across the tournament. And I say that on one end, but then I say on the other end that it pains us to see that we had an entire tournament and then we had a semifinal that was really poorly contested.
Oh, yes, yes, because, yes.
Because you would expect that they would have, that teams would have come with the effort, with the understanding that things are going to be a little different, it's going to be harder, but that did not happen.
Didn't happen. Thanks for your contribution. Philo, no your problem. Reaction, 4241790, keep the calls coming. Philo, your reaction to the caller?
I think he's right in all aspects. Obviously, he follows cricket. When you look at it, the disappointing thing about those very low scores from players who are from franchises, where players who are supposed to be stars. Mm. And the adaptability is one that has me thinking. You know, yes, you're in Trinidad, you know what you're going to expect. You're going to expect pitches that are going to be on tear. Mm. And there's something called adaptability and adjustment. If you can't hit sixes and fours, you can rotate the strike and get ones and twos. And I did not see the adaptability. Okay. I'm not saying the pitches were perfect.
Mm.
But when a team get bowled out for 51, and a team can chase down 94,
mm.
but yet it's the biggest party in sports, you really feel it's a party of people making sport. I need to understand. I need to understand why.
I like that one.
They could not get those low scores.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to know why they...
Well, in fact, Kyle Mears is with...
They could not get the low scores.
Kyle from
the low scores are there. I don't know why they couldn't make it.
Yeah, Kyle from a Barbados perspective, though. I mean, that game against the Zooks, I mean... My mother said she couldn't eat her food at all after the Barbados team couldn't get, was it 92 runs? What happened there, Kyle, before we go back to the calls? What happened in that match? Can you tell us, Kyle?
To be honest, I'm not too sure. I don't know how to explain it. I just thought that the guys thought it was easy. I tried to walk on the game. I took it to the last over, which I thought was a bad idea. Wicket started to fall and we panicked at the end. Instead of just trying to lick off the small score.
Yes.
Like normal, like how people, you know, like how people will go after a small score. People always talk about, you don't play around with small scores. I thought we took the opposite route.
Oh, dear.
I just tried to walk on the game. That's from my perspective.
Mm.
That's how I saw it. It was very disappointing, to be honest.
What was the mood in the camp after you lost to the Zooks? I mean, I can tell you in Barbados, people were devastated. What was the mood in the camp?
Yeah, to lose chase in 90 is never a good feeling.
Mm.
I mean, the coach, the management, they try to get the guys, you know, to cheer up and not focus on the other games that aren't. But at the end of the day, as professional cricketers, we as professional cricketers, we never feel great to know that 90 runs beat us in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was sad. I mean, I felt shame to some extent, you know. My team kind of crossed the line, from, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you had to move on from there. So
yes,
I guess that's what the guys tried to do.
All right, let's take another call. 4341790. We got 15 minutes left. Call us, please. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening, Mr. Mason.
Good evening to you.
How are you? I am abiding and vexed.
You're abiding and vexed.
These cricketers will not use their brains.
Oh, dear.
They expect to use a bat and a ball without any brain. That is the B that they need. And some of them, look, if they think that they have to have breakfast, you must have bread, you have toast and cheese and tea. And if you get up and you don't see them, you can't get green bananas and saltfish and something and make some bush tea or something so and break the air with your stomach and press on. These people are too lazy and not thinking.
Not thinking.
They don't have smart sense. They're not smart.
Oh, dear.
They don't learn how to live with what they have. When you have people like Sylvester Clark and these other people and people that were brought up rough with anything, they know how to change things. Even the order of batting.
Right.
They don't know how to do that. You may not win a match, but let me tell you something. There are bowlers that don't like to get out.
Right.
And they will stand up and will face every ball, even if they don't get a run. But you are going to send a batsman who is interested. He wants to get his score. And he can play the fool and lose the thing. And 2 and 3 wickets will be down before you make 20. And people don't understand that. Even in the thing in England with that last game, that last day, should never have been lost.
Right.
If they had sent the bowlers to face out those balls.
Oh dear.
And think a bowler does not want to get out. He will bat. He will bat if he makes no runs. A batsman gonna play, he must make a score. Mm-hmm. So he gonna fish and float out there so and let somebody get him out for 2. And all sorts of nonsense, and then the whole team is done. Need to learn common sense.
All right. Well,
is what they need.
All right. Put
their brains to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your contribution. Let's try and sneak some more calls in. Got another 10 minutes left for the show. Hello, welcome, missing and guest. You're on.
Yeah, good night, Andrew.
Oh, the point.
Yeah, but I know the point. I still have those 3 remedies for West Indies cricket.
Well, you also have Kyle Mayers, too. You want to say hello to your good friend, Kyle Mayers?
Actually, he made it. He finally exports him in the next game.
So what did you...
I had to tell him that he get him ready for and then he going for a target shot.
What did you tell him, though, that made him made
85? And he scored 85, so he took my advice.
Okay, wonderful.
I think I'm going to play... Point I have is applying for the West Indies cricket court. So if I could then do that,
yeah, sure.
I think I could get 2 to the others.
Did you rehearse the poem though?
You want me to do the poem?
How long is it?
It's 3 verses.
3 verses?
Yeah.
That's long. That's long. Just give us one. Just
right,
give us one verse.
I'm going to give you.
Just one.
I'm going to give you the 3 remedies and then probably next week.
Yes.
3 remedies is bring back the rainbow cricket. Take it into dancing classes that they will learn how to move their feet and get in a psychologist that they did any right. They do not learn use the brain at critical points of the game. She hit the nail on the head, and that is what my point contained. But there's a lot more to it. If you all would enjoy it.
No problem. Next week, we're going to have you on and we're going to have that point.
Actually, I want to get it. I can't come on before. I want to come on the program on time because I have a lot written on the rest.
Well, you have to speak to Ronnie Clark about that to invite
him. Ronnie Clark.
Yes, he's a big man.
Right. I do that and say things like that.
All right, great. Wonderful.
Keep the good worker.
We try. 4-4.
I the fellow for me.
Yeah, fellow is very much there. He's on Zoom. I think he's reading a law book as well.
I'm listening to the boy.
Indeed. Thanks for your contribution. Can we take another call? We can. Hello, welcome, missing and guest.
Yes, Tron, you're on the program.
You're very much in the program.
Yes.
Talk to us.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Mason.
Good evening to you.
Yes, Mr. Mason.
Good evening.
How are my fellow? How you doing, fellow? Just Philip, your friend, your taxi man for years.
Fellow, you know your taxi. You should know your taxi man.
Yes, when I get Philip,
for years too.
Yeah. Of a shirt heart on Sunday.
Yes, you're a good boy.
Yes, please. Mr. Mason, yes, and our fellow.
Yes.
I want you all to stop trying to look for excuses for these best Indian players.
Mm.
I mean, Mr. Philip, fellow, let's keep it real. If you have a little boy right now that play cricket, I will risk to tell you that there's no person in the West Indies that guy would try to imitate or try to put a cricket like that individual. These guys that play cricket right now cannot play no cricket. Mr. Mason.
Right.
These guys can't play. And you got to get them to understand that. You got a guy like Jason Holder that's a policy number one or number two or wrong in the world. This man can't bring home his team.
Oh, yeah.
The man don't have no tactics, no concentration. The man don't have to bring a Yorker, a short pitch ball, a full toss. These guys cannot play. Ain't the same trying to play excellence with these others. When you got cricketers in a area or playing cricket for a country, some person in that team, some person that comes out of the player says, listen, oh, let's play that person. There's nobody in the Caribbean that no young cricketer will try to say, well, listen, oh, let's play that individual. None of them, because they can't play.
All right. Simple. Thanks for your contribution. We're going to try to sneak some more calls in, can we? 44178. Of course, we want also to highlight a couple of good things happening in the BCA. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Andrew.
How are you?
Poor competition. This competition was very poor.
Very poor.
The batting was ordinary.
Yes.
The wicketkeeping, oh, Lord have mercy.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
And the umpires leave a lot to be desired as well.
Oh, dear.
It nothing to do with the pitchers. Any kind of pitches that you put these batsmen on in the same story.
Same.
You put up outside the bell wicket, they can't get the ball in play.
Oh dear, oh dear.
That is pure and simple. This thing they do with the pitch up for the spin and the rogue and all kinds of nonsense. They are not just capable of playing this type of ball.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, I'm sure Kyle will want to react to that, Kyle. I mean, well, it wasn't that bad, Kyle. Thanks for your contribution, caller.
Yeah.
Kylie, you want to react to what the caller just said?
Not really. He has his own opinion,
right,
I guess.
Right.
So, I don't say much about that.
Before we go back to the telephones, 424178, I want to bring Philo Wallace in here. Philo, can you do an assessment of the Tridents? Why do you believe the Barbados Tridents were so poor this year?
I think the Barbados Tridents are poor, Andrew, from a managerial point of view and lack of foresight. When you look at it, we had Trevor Penny, who was elevated to our head coach. Obviously, these are franchises. The BCA doesn't have a lot of say who manages or who's in the management position. But I think that Captain Jason Holder, as well as a senior member of that squad, needs to assert himself. Trevor Penny was a fielding coach just last year. I don't know how much impact or influence he has as a fielding coach to be elevated up to head coach. And Jason, as a leader, needs to really stand up and say, listen, this is what I want, and this is what I expect of my players. I'm not bashing Jason Holder. I think, obviously there are areas in his leadership that he needs to improve. Because as defending champions, you need to defend properly. And what hurt me in Kieran Pollard's interview is that he said that they were revenging the loss for the semi-final last year.
Oh, dear.
It's a serious statement. So when we are defending, we have to defend seriously. We cannot be making sport. We have to get our best combinations. I know there were limitations in relation to practicing and stuff like that. But Jason Holder, being the leader, has to know the best combination and bring out the best out of those players. He has not been able to do it. One thing I have to say to him, and I'll say to his face, why do you bowl your four overs and then go long off a long one and captain the people team?
You don't like that, fellow? No.
If you're a captain and you've got to lead, you leave on the front. You've got to be in the firing line. Don't leave it to the juniors. You put up your hand and say, I am going to bring this team home. And these are things that we want to see from Jason Holder. This is a serious competition. And if you're going to be challenging or making input into cricket in the Caribbean, from a Barbados point of view, our leader has to...
I see.
Cricket is in that state. And you need to lead and lead.
All right, we're just having a little technical thing with Philo.
It's time to bite the bullet and lead the people cricket properly. And that is where we went wrong. We went wrong in our leadership.
All right.
And then we don't want to drop this body. We're playing a lot of failing batsmen. And when...
All right. Okay. Just have a little technical thing with Philo there. So let's go to our good friend Stephen Leslie towards him. Stephen, are you with us? I'm just trying to see if we can get Stephen. Okay, I think we just have a little bit of a
switch on mic.
Okay, Stephen, are you with us, Stephen?
Yes.
All right.
No, yeah, there was a bit of instability with the internet.
Mm. Okay.
But I can hear you now.
Okay, fine. All right. I know that your internet there is very, very good.
Yeah, well, you were inviting me to speak on local cricket, and then I just want to encourage everyone to continue to support local cricket. I mean, we had two centuries made with Zachary McCaskill of Carlton, Kyle Corbin of Sajikura UWAA, and again, this shows that the quality of play on weekends is improving. From a team perspective, you've had Carlton, who've been doing very well as defending champions. Gladiola has played unbeaten. Certainly Wanderers have done very well. And Kyle Mears, who's with us, I mean, he's one of the few centurions that have been able to, you know, do so well within the local domestic tournament. So I just want to encourage people to recognize that every Saturday at 1:30 that they can go around the island and be able to be part of this amazing exercise, because I believe right now Barbados is the only regional entity that continues to have organized cricket during this COVID environment. And that's something that has to be really respected, and we hope to continue to do the best we can to keep everyone safe here when you're playing from our perspective.
Final words with you, Kyle Mears. You're going to be out this coming Saturday to play some cricket? When did you come back from Trinidad and Tobago? When did you get home? I know the tournament finished last Thursday. Were you home right after that, or you left before the semifinals and the finals?
No, everyone had one flight, so we had to wait until the finals and everything played. Everybody traveled back the same time.
All right, final words with you. What do you have to say to the people of Barbados? I know that they didn't do very well, but, you know, do a quick assessment and tell us what you have to say to the people of Barbados about the Tridents.
I was preaching it before the call. I was trying to
just have some pictures. I keep the faith. Is it game or cricket? You know, these things can happen. As defending champions, obviously we didn't put out a good fight, but there's still cricket to be played, and we still have a young team. So these guys will be back, hopefully. And hopefully we put out a better fight next time.
Indeed. Well, we want to thank you very much indeed, Kyle. Thank you for offering, being with us for the last couple of minutes. And we want to thank, of course, Philo Wallace. And, of course, you, Stephen, we got 30 seconds left on the show. Stephen, we're going to finish with you. No doubt you're inviting all of Barbados to come and watch some cricket on the weekend.
Yes, Andrew, and to recognize that we are staging, again, over 200 organized matches. Come out 1:30 p.m. We've got T20 for the BCA Elite and Division 1 teams. We've got it for the intermediate teams and also for those at Division 2. So, before everyone can come out and enjoy some exciting cricket.
Philo, what are you doing in Barbados?
Andrew, I'm here for a couple of weeks and then I'm headed back to Britain.
All right, good, wonderful. All right. Well, we certainly need to meet Philo and have a drink, some public juice. Is that okay with you, Philo?
I call it an official libation.
An official libation. Thanks to you, Philo Wallace. Always a pleasure. Thanks to you, of course, Stephen Leslie. We want to really thank as well Kyle Mears for coming and talking to us as well. Early we had Michael Hall of the CPL. And, of course, Fazeer Muhammad, as usual, very, very good indeed. And we also had Joseph Richborough on the line there from St. Lucia. The Barbados Trident's not doing well, but we want to thank the good performance of the TKR. They certainly perform well, and we wish them well. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's open.